Thanksgiving Day church services are on the edge of extinction. The in thing is Wednesday evening services or none at all. Thanking God comes after family and football. It's the American way. Christmas Day has also become a family holiday, often with football at the center. And to accommodate the national mood, some churches conclude the season with Christmas Eve. And so the church celebration of Christmas is caught between Advent and Epiphany, which in some years can produce 7 etymological sermons on the Greek word for shining. Even before Christmas starts, it's over. It's like the Reformed sacrament. You prepare for it, but it never really happens. Only liturgical realpolitik can save Christmas. We have 2 options. We don't need 3 last Sundays in the church year. Make 2 of them Sundays in Advent, and make the last 2 Sundays in Advent pre-Christmas ones. Another suggestion is that we could sing 1 Christmas hymn on the first Sunday in Advent, increasing the number so that for each Sunday in Advent, so that we would have Christmas hymns on the 4th Sunday. Unless we walk through the malls or listen to the hour of power from the Crystal Cathedral, we are lucky if we even sing Hark the Herald Angels Sing or O Come All Ye Faithful more than once in our churches. The real question is not salvaging Christmas for the church, but whether Christmas was a divine afterthought. In dogmatics, it's a question of God's primary and secondary will. If Adam and Eve had not sinned, would the Son of God have become incarnate and be made like one of us? Think about it. Without sin, the Bible would have had only 2 chapters, Genesis 1 and 2. With impunity, we could finally speak about a first article Christianity and get away with it. Case closed, but not really. A sinless race would have known that God made all things through his word, the eternal Son, and that the Spirit gave form to the murky mass. However, God's Son would not have come to us in the weakness of the fallen Adam. Homo factus est, and he was made man, is what Genesis 3 is all about. And that confession, homo factus est, is as much a confession of who we are as sinners as it is about Christ and who he is and what he did for us. Even if Adam had not sinned, Genesis would still have had a 3rd chapter. The story tree of life held before Adam a promise better than the paradise in which he lived. Beyond that garden lay a more extraordinary world where God would have been with them all the time and not just in the evenings. In that world, God, Adam, and Eve would have seen God at all times. In that world, the sun and moon would no longer divide time into days and nights, and the moon and stars would not string out time into months, seasons, and years. Genesis 1 would have eventually become history. And the night shall be no more. They need no light of lamp or sun, for the Lord their God will be their light, and they would have reigned forever. In that new time, God's presence would not be defined by an abstract doctrine of omnipresence, but God would have been Emmanuel, the God who was with his people, because he would have been one of them. God would have brought his image in human beings to its divinely intended conclusion. In that higher reality, the tree of knowledge would no longer hold forth the threat of death. God would have come as one of Adam's sons, and thus become one with every human being, a holy God as man with holy men. Genesis 3 was not written like that. Substituted was the account of how Adam used God's image as a license to become a God in his own right, And so in Eden, every false god and doctrine was conceived. Adam confused God's reflection in himself with the reality which can only be God himself. He was like the dog in Aesop's fable, looking at his reflection in the water, clutching a piece of meat. And in his greed for more meat, the dog thinks the image is real and jumps in the water and ends up having nothing at all. Instead of climbing to Mount Olympus to accomplish self-divinization and auto-apotheosis, Adam ruins his own humanity beyond recognition. He digs his own grave. And you know the rest of the story. The offended creator of humanity becomes its redeemer. And now through the sacraments, he refits wayward children to be his heavenly companions. But there was a price to pay for human folly. He came down from heaven, but now it was for our salvation. Eve could birth no sinless child, so God designated a new Eve to give the world a sinless Adam and still wrapped him in sinful flesh. His death was worse than Adam's, but he succeeds where Adam failed. On that account, God places him at his right hand, where we once were also destined to go. And now Jesus is the progenitor of a new humanity, the man Isaiah calls the everlasting Father. And this Father takes us, his children, with him. We sit in the heavenly places. We sit at God's right hand. If we can agree that Luther was the first theologian since the days of the apostles to understand Jesus, so we can agree with Hermann Sasse, who said that Bach was and remains the only German who understood Luther. He concludes his oratorio with a rarely found understanding of Christmas. God has been revenged against his adversaries. Christ has put to rout God's enemies. Death, devil, and sin have been crushed, and mankind assumes his rightful place at God's side. Now, if you are curious about what the third chapter of Genesis would have looked like, you'll find pieces of it in the book of Revelation. He who conquers, I will grant him to sit with me on my throne, as I myself conquered and sat down with my Father on his throne. God's incarnation on earth is completed by our being placed at God's side, which is now our rightful due. That's the first Sunday after Christmas, for which a second Sunday is superfluous. Bei Gott hat seine Stelle das menschliche Geschlecht. Mankind now assumes his rightful place at God's side.